He's against it.
Oh, yeah.
David said he's got
it. We'll call the council back into session. We will now go back to Mr. Willard, I guess, or Mr. Griffin. Mr. Willard, go ahead.
My name is Tim Willard with Fuqua & Urey law firm here in Georgetown, and I represent opponents in this case. Normally, I'll point over my shoulder and introduce who I represent. There should be this booklet, and I apologize if you're short of them. Mr. Lang said there were four of them. Before I die, I'm going to make sure I get the right number to you guys, but it seems Planning Commission devoured more than I thought they would.
We don't have any.
Here's a couple here. Here's.
Can I keep this one on top, right?
I have actually four, but here, George, keep you just. This is the original.
I'll give that one back
for the record.
Well, you'll see, I'll hold up what I can, but on.
Well, I got one here. I'm gonna give this back to Lawrence. We gotta keep this one. But share one in there somewhere.
We'll share one here.
On tab one of that book, it lists the individuals that I know that have hired me anyway to represent them to organize the opposition. And there's approximately 32 individuals. Some of them are seated in the front row. Some of them are back in the audience. Some of them may not even be here. I can tell you that I've tried to at least let them know that the idea, like you did at the outset, Mr. Griffin, is not to be repetitive, be efficient, get your point across, and hopefully I can help in that regard. I have some supplemental material that I'll give to Mr. Lank. And I'll be referring to that as well. And I also have some petitions and letters that I'll present to you as I proceed in my organization, my presentation to you. Just as we broke, not one but probably three people told me I don't have to say anything because Mr. Rutz said what I'm going to say. So I'm just going to sit down. Now, what I won't...
Hold the applause.
I won't try to be repetitive, but... and I won't try to refer to the National House of Hope as the mothership. I really didn't realize I did that as much. It's the Shiloh House of Hope is actually the home that's being run with the individual, with the juveniles there. As you learn from the applicants, the National House of Hope, as I understand it, was formed to start trying to create affiliates. And you've heard about some of them. The Orlando House of Hope is located at 2036 36th Street in Orlando. And the National House of Hope is located 2020, which is right next door. Apparently, based on my research, it's an office next door in the homes. The home's out on the point there in the Lake Catherine. At the outset, I was somewhat concerned, although salivating, that Mr. Rutt was not talking about the law, because we truly believe this is a land use decision, one way or the other, no matter how you look at it. And obviously those land use decisions are guided by, if not directed by, the law. Towards the end of Mr. Rutt's presentation, he did touch on that. And there's law out there on this. You have your Sussex County law, AR1. This is not a permitted use, is our contention in there. Therefore, they're applying for conditional use. Although arguably you don't see a residential school listed in there as legislatively mandated, you see, as Mr. Rupp would argue and what the application bases it on, institution, school, hospital. So maybe it fits. If it does fit, then you go to the next level of consideration, which is the public purpose section that guides you, which is the Gibson-Steen decision that I know it's one case you, a gentleman, are probably familiar with. You go to your comprehensive plan. You go to the state strategies. That doesn't have too much teeth in it. And you also go to Title IX. What's significant, I think, about the law in this case is when the legislature, that is you, have mandated that a conditional use is appropriate for a different area, then you give the public considerations, discretionary considerations. Those have been dictated by Steen and Gibson to say, first of all, is it legislatively desirable? And you have to make that threshold decision. What's significant, I think, about your code is these institutions or schools or hospitals, if you want to place this thing there, is not just in AR. That provision for conditional use is in about 7 other districts. Okay, so it can't be presumed that, hey, this is the only place we wanted for a conditional use. It's in AR, MR, HR, UR, B1, C1, L1, H1. So it can be considered in those districts as well, excluding HR and UB, which don't allow schools. But most of them allow institutions. It's not exclusive to AR that it could be shoehorned in there. Once you make the decision that, okay, it's appropriate for conditional use, then what the case law says, in looking at 96904, is it will not conflict with the character of the zone. We submit to you that it would in this case. And it would be no risk to public welfare. And those are the two STEAM criteria. And the proponents have the burden, at least, of presenting that this application will be without real detriment to the neighborhood. That's some of the jargon used. So there is guidance and specific law on this subject. I'll talk more about the comprehensive plan and the state strategies map in a little bit. I think what's important is, what is it? And we've heard what it is. And, you know, my clients, or at least the ones that I've talked to, in the last half hour of the testimony you've heard a lot about people trying to help teenagers and teenagers needing help. This is not an opposition organized against that. This opposition is organized as residents that live around this area. I may refer to this map. These are a lot of my clients, but these are also individuals that live around the area that have written opposition letters and have also written petitions. You can see the location of the proposed property, and you can see the location of the opposition. This is a very local-oriented opposition. So when we try to, you know, they get me to look into it, and they've done a lot of work themselves to try to say, what is the Orlando House of Hope? After all, that is what the proponents say they're going to be modeled after. If you look at their material in particular, and I have it on tab 1 of what I just gave you, that the Orlando House of Hope, there are teens who are suffering from drugs, alcohol, occult, as well as sexual, mental, and emotional abuse. You've heard that. We know that. It's not just a school. It's something different, something special. Not only do they care for and treat and counsel individuals, but they counsel individual teenagers with special problems. It's different from a school like Epworth Christian, Jefferson, or what was the other one that was referred to? Eagle's Nest down on Route 1. They also say in their material, this non-denominational, not-for-profit residential program for teens is located on beautiful farmland, not yet, that the vice president has generously donated. And far from it for me to challenge Ms. Ryder's intentions or Ms. Sturgeon's in their effort to do this. I think their effort to help teens is a good one. We know now, and they've offered for you, that the fact that this contract is contingent, and that's in tab 1. In other words, she's donating this property for the use of this. Okay, she's not donating the value at it. If it's not used for that, it'll revert to her. Not only that, is she will be an officer of it. I assume a compensated officer. So this is the business. And she didn't hold back on that and said she didn't know what to do with her land, or she wanted to hang on to the farmland. And she got this calling to do this. So there is the business aspect of this for her. What's, I think, significant about that is you've heard no alternatives. Generally, if you might start a business and property is something you need, you might scope out other alternatives, but not. So there's the element of this just saving this land for them to live on it, which I don't think necessarily makes it appropriate for land use. We know that the Shiloh House of Hope is affiliated, as they say in their promotional material, the National House of Hope, after which Shiloh House of Hope is patterned, boasts a very high success rate. You have a large book that I've reviewed, the affiliate agreement. There's an affiliate agreement. They, like a franchise agreement, they receive training, information, support, some of it required. In turn, and I think this was also mentioned in the proponent's application, the money that they raise And we didn't hear much about tuition. I think planning and zoning, you have in your minutes, that they are going to have a sliding scale, but there'll be a tuition, how they pay for this, but they also raise money to build a facility, et cetera, like this. In tab one of the supplemental material I gave you, you will see that it's an addendum to the affiliate organization where the affiliate agrees to voluntarily contribute a monthly or quarterly basis to the National House of Hope, a portion to the local House of Hope's unrestricted income to be used by National House of its annual by National House of Hope in its annual operating budget. In other words, the National House of Hope, which is not the facility which cares for Orlando individuals, but the organization which is trying to affiliate, is taking revenue or money that's being raised by the local one for their organization. And I don't need to apply anything about that other than there is this relationship. So you need to look at the National House of Hope and the Orlando House of Hope, which I will refer to now as the model. That's the one that's been up and running since 1994. You also see in tab one of the supplemental information I gave you that their solicitation campaign for franchising or building up the National House of Hope. We've heard the sheriff from Orange County, and he mentioned 70 National House of Hopes. Ms. Sturgeon, I think, talked about 8 that were up and running. I may have misspoke, but there are relatively few that are up and running that I can tell since they started this project. My research showed 3, but I won't contest that. There are 8. On their webpage, they say they're currently looking for counselors, and they ask for counselors aged 14 and 18 with spirit-led counseling. There have been no, assuming they're having some counselors now, Delaware requires in Title 24-30-30 that licensed substance abuse counselors be licensed. There's been no evidence of any of their employees being licensed in their solicitation to hire counselors. They're not asking for any qualifications whatsoever. There's been some talk of what the requirement would be, or they would abide by all the requirements for a private school. I've included, just doing some research on this because I didn't know, if you look at tab 9 of the supplemental material, it includes all the requirements for certification of a public school. First of all, you have to get the certification. You need to contact the Office of Child Care Licensing Department. They have oversight over individuals and organizations that provide care and education and protection. Supervisor and guidance to children. I think somebody asked the foster care question, and I think that's the agency, Mr. Phillips, that has oversight over that. They have to contact the Office of State Fire Marshal, Office of Food Protection, and obviously the local zoning authority is the last one. There's no necessarily requirement they be done after the fact. In most cases, like for charter schools, you'd go and get your charter, your certification before you start looking for capital space. You don't have any evidence of what that certification would be or any other licenses. They have resubmitted some information that whether it came in today or yesterday in reference to their credentials for screening. And it seems, although Mr. Rutt didn't make a presentation at Planning and Zoning, I know he was here, and I addressed some of those issues. And I'm quite honestly unclear on what the screening process would be. They indicate that there would be no felons, and she cited 42.15 of the Title 11 of the Delaware Code, which is a list of the violent offenders for purposes of habitual offenders, where they list what violent ones are. Generally, their condition says they will not have exhibited violent behavior within the last 24 months. We also heard, I think, that there wouldn't be a contract with the court, but there may be referrals from the court. As a former prosecutor and somebody that does a fair amount of defense work in family court as well, juveniles are not convicted of crimes, they're adjudicated. I think that maybe that's why Mr. Rutt chose that words. I believe Ms. Sturgeon said some of them may have been found delinquent. If they are just excluding violent felons, you should be aware that there are dozens and dozens, and I won't list them all here, of felonies involving arson, unlawful sexual contact, indecent exposure that could be eligible to get through their screening process. And I make that comment for no other reason to say that that's a possibility. If they, and I don't think they're purporting that they won't have any contact with the courts. On the contrary. And I think there's an effort by the proponent to say this is a school, and there's an effort to say, well, we'll address your concerns, but some of the things they're doing reference the security alarms, the kind of ratio that they have there as far as people, the reverse 911 option. These are not conditions that would normally apply, first of all, to a regular day school and probably not a normal residential boarding school. And they shouldn't be, because this is not. So therefore, the argument that other schools have been located in rural areas doesn't make sense in based on their own application. Then we ask the question, where should the facility go? In your AR1 district for non-residential uses, the comprehensive plans says the predominant use in this district will continue to be agriculture and agriculture-related uses. Industrial uses that support or depend on agricultural or forest products. District-related services would also be appropriate. This is not, why is that important? Well, can you make exceptions to your comp plan? Yes, the law says that you should, it is law. And more importantly, some of the decisions that have come down that guide us or direct us in reference how conditional uses should be decided say that your comprehensive plan intention is should be primary consideration, and they don't call for such exceptions. However, in the state strategies map, which also gives you some guidance, maybe not as much teeth as a comp plan, says that level two areas should be for educational facilities, property owned by school districts, contiguous to existing towns, or where access to public water and sewer services exist. Level three, in fact, even says schools will not be encouraged to locate in level three. Keep in mind, we're in level two, where the proposed application is. When there are suitable sites available in level one or two. So the state has spoken on this. In tab four of the booklet I gave you, I've indicated, although the proponent is trying to distinguish where some of these other facilities are located, the Stevenson House is located on the edge of the town of Milford. Cedars Creek, which is a conditional use, is just a mile outside of town, west east of Bridgeville, and that's a school for kids that are having learning problems and things like that. That's somewhat distinguishable. As is Stevenson House, which is a contract facility and a detention facility. But you'll see that a lot of these schools, the Allen School or special needs kids, it's not residential, and SCI and Work Relief, they're all located on fringe areas of municipalities, which is consistent with your comp plan and the state strategies map. In my supplemental material, that's the one with the clip, doesn't have a book, I've located where the House of Hope is, and Mr. Cole's already touched on this because I guess he's seen the planning and zoning material, but the House of Hope is located, this is the Orlando House of Hope, this is a major interstate here, this is House of Hope Orlando right here, and this is what was referred to as the 36th Street jail. It's largely an urban environment. And this is their model, and that's where it is. In tab two, you have a Google map of that, as well as a smaller size of the aerial. My clients, the people that live around there, just had concern and fears about what this was all about. And based on some research we did, if you turn to tab three of the supplemental material, you will see Orange County Sheriff's responses to Orlando House of Hope. And that address is 2036 36th Street. And when I talked to the records department in the Orange County Sheriff's Office, I said, well, just give it to me from 2000 to September 2007, which is most recent. So what you'll see in tab three is the result of the Orange County Sheriff's Office, and they must have a more advanced system than a lot of our municipalities, It's called a Type Burton system, where they can just type in an address in their computer for their 911 system or their response system, and it'll say in there how many times or every event that a sheriff has responded to this location. And this is 2036 right here. This is 2020, which is next door. That's rough, but based on my research, that's where they are. 2036 is the Shiloh House of Hope. The Orlando House of Hope, where the children are currently housed, the teens are. And you'll see the agency dispatch list on this. And keep in mind, this is from 2000 to 2007. And what I've done, so you don't have to do it, but please, you can check it if you want. You'll see each one of those codes. From 2000 until 2007, September of 2007, I'm going to have to get some water soon. There have been 354 individual sheriff or police officer responses to the Orlando House of Hope. This is reported by the Orange County Sheriff's Office. And if you break that down, on the first page, there were two for abuse and neglect. There was one for aggravated assault. There were two for a citizen's assist. There was one attempt to contact. There were 11 batteries. There were 8 criminal mischiefs. There was one drug violation misdemeanor, one escape prisoner, 2 fraud counterfeits. There were 15 general investigations. There was one assist fire department. There were 25 responses by the Orange County Sheriff's Office to the Orlando House of Hope for mentally ill person nonviolent. There was one for just a general misdemeanor. There was 156 for a missing person. You'll note they have an escape category, but apparently during the course of these years, at least the last few years, every time they go out there for a missing person, it's not an escape because they're not under detention. So, and believe me, gentlemen, I don't have reports on these. This is all I have. I presume it's because they had a walk-off or somebody's left, so they get a call from the Orlando House of Hope saying we have a missing person. But 156 times they've responded to missing person reports from the Orlando House of Hope. 7 were missing persons with an endangered noted after it. 5 were for medical only. 1 was for sexual battery. 3 were for other sexual offenses. 1 was for a stolen vehicle. 10 were for attempted suicide. 3 were for a suspicious incident. 2 were for a suspicious person. And 17 were for verbal disturbance. And when Mr. Rutt says, we don't know, I respect that to the extent that the applicants have a vision here. They also have a model, and this is what we do know about the model. If you turn to the next page, which is the Orange County Sheriff's responses to the National House of Hope, and as I try to learn more about this, it was my understanding National House of Hope was the office that's in charge of franchising these things, these homes. So it was just an office, and I was kind of uncertain. See the 2020 on the right-hand column there? This is just from 2002, so just the last 5 years. The other one was 7. They've had 277 responses to that address. And I thought, well, it may be redundant, because I was checking dates and seeing if it was the same, and when I spot-checked them, they weren't the same. What's significant about that is you see these ATCs, attempt to contact, and there was a location there, or an officer's name by JAM19, and I tried to get in contact with him or talk to him about it, and the only thing that I was able to glean from this, all those ATCs at the National House of Hope, was that these police officers with the juvenile units somehow were acting as probation officers for the individuals at the House of Hope. Therefore, they had to report there and monitor them on a regular basis. That was the large number of ATCs. For the National House of Hope, as far as response in the last few years, you still see in that location some responses for aggravated assault and things like that. And I don't know it's possible that the address was given and they interchange them or something like that. So, just gentlemen, I think that is significant. I think when the residents of this neighborhood say, what's this modeled after? What's this all about? You know, that's some of their experience they're having. And that's why when we look to similar locations and we look to your strategies map and your comp plan, this something like this belongs in a transitional area. Why? Because police, if they're going out there that much, or if they need to protect the citizens near there, they need to be closer. Fire needs to be closer. Medical care needs to be closer. If you look at tab 5 of the supplemental information I gave you, that's the location of the Illinois House of Hope, which is just in South Chicago, and it's an urban environment. I don't know much more about it. I just Googled the police department, which looks like it's a few blocks away from it. I also found the location of the Minnesota, or House of Hope of Minnesota, which seems to me is a smaller girls' house that only has 6 residents. It appears to be in a small town. What's significant about that, it's in Marshall, Minnesota, is it's in the middle of the town. And as you can see by the next page, that there are 2 or 3 police stations right nearby. And I'm assuming there are probably other facilities like fire and health around that same area. Mr. Rutt was distinguishing my analogy of the Seaford House, which is a residential treatment facility that's state mandated, or children and family services send individuals there. I don't know how many they have. They have children with emotional problems. If you look at my tab 7, you see that's located on North Market Extended, which is right next to the police station, also in that neighborhood of town. You have an aerial of that, which is probably overkill, not a very good aerial. Finally, another state facility, which I tried to give you more description of, which is the Grace Snowden Cottages. And again, I'm not trying to say this is what they envision. This is, in fact, a more secure facility, but it does deal with children that have similar psychological problems, that have failed sort of in regular schooling. And that facility, Grace Snowden, which is a residential treatment facility, different because it's detention and it's contract with the state, but that's located on the Ferris property, right at Center Road and 141. And we think, based on the information that we've learned about the model, et cetera, that these facilities make a lot more sense as far as locating where this property should be. In tab 6 of the book that's scarce, you have 20 or 30 letters, and I know you gentlemen take the time before you make decisions to read the letters. What's significant about them is they come from this location. What's significant about them is they're all different. You're not getting form letters, albeit you have a petition. And the concerns that you can glean from these are traffic. The traffic that would be generated from a facility, if they ever got up to that, with 48 individuals, 10 staff people, working shift work, I'm sure, if there's some people on night duty. The noise, potential noise, I think there's some recreational facilities located on the property. The safety issues, I think we've demonstrated that based on their model and potentially even good intentions to screen, their intention is to serve an at-risk teen population that necessarily has some problems that result in more intense need for infrastructure like police. The proponents have mentioned hunting. This is an actively hunted area. I think they even get the farming permits, so you can hunt more deer than usual. I've mentioned the fire. The closest fire, I think, is either Seaford or Bridgeville. Bridgeville, 7 miles away. Emergency health, the closest hospital, I think, is Seaford. EMT units are out of the towns. The lifestyle in this community is obviously very rural. I don't need to beat that horse. Most of you probably are familiar with that area. For the record, if you go to tab 12, you'll see photographs of McDowell Street. You've seen aerials of it. The proponents have admitted it's a very rural Western Sussex traditional farming community that is not appropriate for such institutional development. Now, I know generally when I kind of wrap things up, you'll ask for opposition. Since I have some of my clients that may have specific things to say, and I might be able to... I might be able to move things along more efficiently if I call some of the people that would speak in opposition and solicit that information.
Your call.
Is that all right? Mr. Barry, is it Barry?
Barry.
Oh, thank you very much. You need to state your name and your position. Be brief and not repetitive if you can.
I'll do my best.
I'm not supposed to say that, am I?
Name and address.
Okay. Yeah. My name is Carl Behrens, and I'm at 5113 Brooks Road, Wolford, Maryland. Yes, I'm that guy. As a personal note, your fortitude is amazing, but I would like the council at some point in time to consider more padding for the benches.
It's yeah, by design. That's
that's what I was afraid of.
That was tickle special.
Well, I after all of the emotion of the presentation earlier, it was nice to hear a little bit of law. I'm an attorney. I'm admitted in Maryland, Florida, Nebraska, and Washington, D.C. I served with the Air Force as a JAG, and the law is what I know, and the law is what I'm going to speak to here. What I'm hoping that you as the council will consider are property rights. I mean, that's what we're dealing with here. We're dealing with the question of whether one person has the right to do with their property as she wishes, or whether the surrounding community has the right to weigh in on whether or not what she is doing is the highest and best use of her property, given the conditions of the community. Now, because those other people have rights too, as you all are well aware, the analogy that I like to use is that your right to swing your fist ends where my nose begins. That's nothing new. Everybody's heard that before, and I think that's very appropriate in this case. Wolford, Maryland's in a not very good condition right now because we have in our midst the Vision Quest Morningstar Academy. Charlie Powell, a realtor in the area, got an exception to zoning to open the Morningstar Academy several years ago, and it was to treat 13 to 19 year old youths who had drug and alcohol problems. I'll make this very brief. They were supposed to have been detoxed. They were supposed to come to the facility to be educated, to return to the community in some semblance of normalcy. Well, that's sort of grown like Topsy. Back when he started it, we had some kids that in the local area that needed help, and he was helping them. He had a son who had those problems, and he had this mission. Well, as it developed over time, it became harder and harder to support this facility with what it had going on. It was a former church camp. It's a non-hardware secure facility. And so he brought in Vision Quest. Vision Quest is a national organization. Some of you may have heard about it. It has Conestoga wagon rides across the country to, you know, support youth and so on. It does very good work. Its most successful facility is out west, where it sits on a mountaintop surrounded by bears. And the kids know it. We don't have that advantage in Wolford. In Wolford, we have been wished upon with medium-risk juveniles from the state system. Now, we don't know what these medium-risk juveniles have done. We don't know where they've been because of HIPAA, federal law. Once you open a facility like this, what goes on in that facility becomes secret. Not because they're trying to keep it secret, but because the people that operate the facility can't release the information. They can't tell you what these children have been involved in, what these juveniles have been accused of, or whether or not they're there because they would be somewhere else in confinement but for this facility. We believe that most of the juveniles in our facility are there because they were given the option of, hey, go to this facility or else face confinement. And because they're there, we've had problems. It's non-hardware secure. They try to control the population. They have a 1-to-8 ratio of supervisors to juveniles. But we've had kids leave the property. Vision Quest calls them walkaways. We call them escapees. And we call them escapees because we had a neighbor in one instance whose home was invaded by two of these escapees, who used a corkscrew to open a bottle of wine in her kitchen, walked out to her garage, raised the garage door, and drove off in her truck. Those two juveniles were apprehended in Baltimore. We had another juvenile who climbed into the trunk of one of the people who was supervising the group and drove off the facility. Ended up in Virginia somewhere. I don't remember the details. But the bottom line is that the supervisor, the employee there at Vision Quest, had developed a romantic relationship with this juvenile and was taking this juvenile away for her own purposes. The stories go on and on. And I'm not going to get any more emotional about it than that. I think the stories speak for themselves. Our sheriff is a Democrat. Our governor in Maryland is a Democrat.
That's too bad.
I raise that for no political purpose. Only to say that our sheriff wants to get reelected. Sheriff Jim Phillips is the salt of the earth. He's a great guy. But he is limited in what he can do when our Department of Juvenile Services is essentially broken and is trying to get these kids into some sort of care where they can be controlled, where they can be rehabilitated. The most recent effort is probably going to result in this facility being fenced with electronic security on the fence. It's probably going to result in the state taking over management of the facility with Vision Quest still continuing to operate programs to try to help the children. All right. I'm sure your attorney will tell you that that we can work around this, that we can word this so that it'll work. And you probably can. But let me tell you what we have in our zoning wording that has not helped us in the least little bit. It says that this exception will continue, that this special exception will not be transferable to any new owner or purchaser of the property. Pretty straightforward, and you'd think that would protect you. Well, Charlie Powell still owns the property, so we're stuck. I'm sure you can very carefully craft something that might protect you, but why take the risk? The bottom line is you need to put this facility someplace other than in the middle of a residential community. The three concerns that we had in Wolford, and I think you probably ought to have here, is one, concern for law enforcement. And I'll get back to that. Two, concern for the citizens, and three, concern for the juveniles involved here. Eastern Shore people don't make good victims, and I suspect the folks that live in this area aren't much different. When we had the juveniles break out and do the home invasion and car theft, we had folks riding around in pickup trucks with shotguns ready to shoot. I think that could happen here. The kids don't have cars, they don't have phones, they don't have drugs. They're going to be looking for all three of those things if they get a chance to walk away from the facility and if they haven't been rehabilitated. The concern for law enforcement, of course, is that you put your law enforcement people at the same risk that you put your citizenry. They sign up for the job. They're like the military. They carry guns for a reason. But consider whether or not you want to do that to them when they're far enough away from the facility that's going to take them some response time, and they're going to have a harder time massing forces to do what needs to be done to control the situation. The concern for citizens, I think, speaks for itself. You've heard from the folks. You're going to hear more from the folks here. A program of this type needs to be on that mountaintop, or it needs to be adjacent to services. If children going to this facility are involved in drug use, random sex, and suicide attempts, they need to be a lot closer to a hospital. They need to be closer to a sheriff's facility, a state trooper's barracks, someplace, a hospital, someplace that can give immediate service to protect them from themselves. Reverse 911, response plan, nighttime security. To me, that all says this is a dangerous situation for this community. Nobody from the public will see the pre-admission application. Let me just go back to that very briefly. When these juveniles are taken in, they are taken in under the cover of privacy, and you're going to be stuck with what you get. We would hope that a facility like this will continue indefinitely. It might last a year, it might last 10 years, it might last 20 years, it might last 6 months. When that facility fails, or when that concept fails, who moves in to work that facility? That's what the problem, that's the real bottom line of the problem. We've had people come in under us, under Morningstar Academy, and operate the facility. And it can happen, it can happen very easily, and I'm not sure you can write around that to prevent that from happening here. This is a noble cause, but it's got to be set up somewhere more geographically appropriate. And you thereby would protect the rights of the majority of these residential homeowners. We are in the midst of it. We're doing everything that we can legislatively with our representatives, our state senators, and we're making some progress, but we lock our doors now. We keep our cars in the garages. We watch very carefully who comes in our neighborhoods. It's not a good situation to be in for folks that bought their homes and their property in good faith, work their farms, have retired here, live here, and go to church here. Thank you.
Can I ask you, can I make a comment?
Sure.
Mr. Barons, is that what you said?
Yes.
Okay. What you said about Vision Quest is correct. I agree with that. I know Sheriff Phillips fairly well. I talked to him yesterday. But you missed a point. You said that these students that come in there are from medium-risk juveniles from the state system.
That's what we've been told.
Right. That's what Mr. Phillips told me. These students coming in here are not. These kids are not assigned from the court system. These kids are coming in here, and they go through counseling. There is no parent counseling at Vision Quest. It's a secular program, altogether completely different from what this program is. This is mandatory that the parents have to be counseled along with the students.
Mr. Dukes, with all due respect, Vision Quest does make every attempt to involve the parents in the rehabilitation of the child. They're not very successful at it.
Not according to Mr. Sheriff Phillips.
Okay. I'll have to get with him on that, but we have been told by representatives of Vision Quest that they do. That's one reason they want to keep it in a community, is so that they can have access to parents.
What you said about walkaways and so forth is true, because he said the kids are sentenced there because they don't want to be there, and they get tired of it and they just walk away. He said, but you know, the difference in this program is these kids are there and they're being counseled, and this is a faith-based program, which Vision Quest is not faith-based at all.
Well, Vision Quest will tell you that they're there to try to get these juveniles their GEDs.
What's their success rate at Vision Quest?
I have no idea.
Very low. What's the success rate of Shallow House or House of Hope or Teen Challenge or some of those programs?
No idea.
80 to 90%.
I'll yield to those figures.
Yeah, I'm not trying to debate you.
Sure.
You missed something that, you know.
I understand.
Yeah.
Let's just not debate different programs where there's a land use issue.
Oh, sure.
Right.
Sure. Absolutely.
I'd
like
to get back to that where you talked about law and land use.
Understand. And that's our position. The problem that we've got is that once you grant that conditional use, or once you grant that zoning exception or exemption or zoning amendment, we don't even go back to our county council to ask if they'll take that away, because you've granted it. You know, you're working a hardship on somebody when you take it away. It's much harder to take something away than it is to grant it. And so we just would ask that, for the sake of these folks that may be going through the same thing that we've ended up going through, you consider that very carefully before you do.
Sheriff Phillips told me that he has a meeting next week with the state.
Yes.
And they've had so many problems with walkaways that he's going to try to get the state to come in and take it over.
That's correct.
And run the program, because it's what you said it is. But it really, I don't look at it as the same type of program, you know. Not saying they would never have a walkaway from Shallow House of Hope,
mm-hmm.
but
well,
it's just a different program geared to another type of rehab.
Certainly, I understand. I guess my position is that we might have a different kind of program, but you've got the same kind of kids.
Yeah.
Kids want to be there, some kids don't want to be there. Some kids' parents want them to be there, and they're going to try it, but then they're going to want to walk away. They're going to want a car to go back home, or they're going to want a phone to call their friends, or they're going to want drugs out of the medicine cabinet in the neighbor's house to get high. That's our concern.
Well, Jim, I got a problem. Do we have the ability to place a condition on make one of the conditions based on a type of program versus a school? You know, just the basically broad definition of just a school or a school / counseling program. I mean, can we get down the it's conditioned that it has to be faith based? Because Dale says this one's faith based, this one wasn't. And I mean, we can't get to that kind of minutia.
How could you ever monitor?
I'm going to hear that too. Respond to the application before us.
Right.
The types of conditions you could impose would not be about their philosophy.
Right.
But could be about the number, if you granted it, could be about such things as the number of residential structures.
Right.
Would control the number of residents. If you deny it, of course, then that's...
Right, but we can't get into whether it's faith-based or it's not faith-based or this...
You shouldn't.
No, we shouldn't. No, I mean, we can't make that a condition. But, so, I mean, we need to curtail a lot of that conversation so that we can stay focused, because I think we're drifting.
The fact that the applicant would be associated with a faith-based program is what the applicant's presenting.
Right, I understand.
We can't insist that if they were secular... You know, we can't insist that they be faith-based or vice versa.
Right.
Can we insist that the applicant is the only one that can operate the facility?
What do you mean?
Can we insist that Shiloh House of Hope is the only one
If there were any change in the use, if you did approve it, and there were some subsequent change, then you could ask them to come back here for...
Change in ownership.
Review of the conditional use.
Change in ownership being one of those.
Well, I'm not sure about that one. That might. Have you ever had that before, Lawrence?
We've had two or three applications in 30 years that were applied just to an individual.
Mm-hmm.
But do they hold up?
Is there some history where that has happened?
But, Jim, is there any case law saying that that's appropriate or not appropriate? These are land use decisions, and I've always been counseled that we cannot give them to the individual. We give it to the land, and it runs with the land and not the individual.
Right, this morning about the owners of LLCs.
This would not be the time for me to give you...
No, I'm not... Right.
That would need to be researched.
Okay, right. I understand.
Mr. Jones, you have a question?
I got just one question. Sure. You talked about going back to your county council. Was it a zone change or was it a conditional use? Do you know?
No, this was an exemption. A zoning exemption was granted in this case.
Exemption. So that's
similar to what we did.
Special exception.
Yeah.
Special exception, like a board of adjustments?
Suspected there might be a difference in the
state. The state just walks in and drops their balloon anyway.
Well, the state would, but it was a county issue. It was a county thing that took care of that
problem. Yes, sir.
Okay. Special exception, so I guess.
Okay, let's... I think this gentleman was finished. We'll ask Mr. Willard if he has anything further.
I didn't know that Mr. Behrens was a lawyer. That's all I say about that.
No, these were my prepared remarks. So.
Thanks for
Thank you, gentlemen.
And I don't want to dwell on the Wolford thing because you made your
help
point
yourself
about the distinction. And what's significant about it is it's close enough in a media range that this is something that my clients are aware of, the people in this area are aware of, so they want to learn more about it. When we learned more about it, it seemed like it started out fairly modest, and that heightened their concerns. I have just probably a 20-second clip, and I think it's got Sheriff Phillips on it.
Play it.
I'll play for you. I think it's from VOC.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
I'm just really hoping this is not like a soap opera or something. Make sure we're in
November. Take a chance. Go ahead, Tim.
At least the public can't see it, but it'll be available too.
That would be a riot.
I think I've queued it up, but there was some of that on there.
Did you show that?
Did this.
sixth time this month that someone has escaped from this school for troubled teens. You know, it was just Wednesday night that the Dorchester County Sheriff's Department officials from that academy met with the public to address the security issues there. However, as WDOC's Joe DePanker discovered, both neighbors and deputies are frustrated with the apparent lack of progress after that meeting. The teenager escaped the facility at about 5:30 Friday morning. An hour later, the entire town knew that we're only a couple of hundred feet away from the facility, and I'm also in somebody else's backyard. Fear has gripped this community and kept many people locked in their home.
Many people in this neighborhood are staying from work today because they're worried about the property. They're worried about, you know, their kids getting off the school bus.
The Dorchester County Sheriff's Department and the public thought the meeting 2 days ago fixed the problem.
We left the meeting feeling reasonably sure that possibly things would change, you know, things would be tightened up. Apparently that hasn't taken place.
I can't believe it. We were reassured at a meeting, you know, less than 48 hours ago that the problem was taken care of, the staff was retrained, the security was tightened, and here we are again, 6 o'clock this morning, flying a chopper looking for a boy.
And now the sheriff says the town has to suffer.
I've had to stay under lock and key all day. Just afraid that if I go anywhere, I'm going to be carjacked. I need to get the side of a home invasion, I'm going to find myself.
Wolford residents say this is normally a fairly quiet town, but all day Friday, sheriffs have been patrolling and people have been looking over their shoulder. Reporting in Wolford, Joe DePanker, WBOC News.
Let's give you some perspective now of where this is happening in Dorchester County. As we take a look at the map, Wolford, south of Cambridge, near Church Creek in Dorchester County, that is where Charles Miller escaped at 5:30 this morning. This academy houses some 52 juveniles from Maryland and Delaware. According to the sheriff, the teenagers at this facility do have criminal records and go there to get help. However, this is not considered a jail.
And WBOC spoke to the director of the Maryland Department of Juvenile Services. He says he has placed a moratorium on any new admissions to the academy. Also, staff from the department will travel to the facility to help straighten out the situation.
Will a seafood processing plant in Cambridge?
Wait, I want to hear that.
He missed it last week.
I'll submit this for the record so you'll have it.
Good, I'll look up.
As I said,
listen to it, George. My wife threw the TV away.
I'm going to call a couple more witnesses and let them try to reel them in a little bit. Sandy Smith, please. Ms. Smith, you live in this area, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Can you indicate on the map where you live?
Sure. I don't even know where I live here. I live right there, and I moved there last year from right here. So I am from here, I'm 0.8 miles, but through the woods, there's a ditch that runs through here, and I'm only like 1,000 feet from the House of Hope. I made this map. I personally went around and talked to most of these people, and I had other people that were talking to the rest of them.
Back to the mic, back, just in case.
I had other people that took some of the off roads there to see how other people felt about it. They were all in opposition. I wrote a letter, and most of the people that are in the green wrote letters as well to the board or to the council and to the zoning board, and have expressed in the other meeting their opposition for a number of different reasons. One being it's so far, you know, out of town. I don't want to go through the location thing again. We've already covered the state police in Bridgeville, 8 3/4 miles. I actually tracked this in my car. The hospital's 10.5 miles. The fire is 7.5. Seaford, the nearest town in one direction, Seaford is 10 miles, Bridgeville is 7. But what we haven't told is this facility is 1 mile, 1 3/10 mile from the Maryland line. So if they do have people that walk off, I mean, you're talking about two states here that it's going to cost money to have them come back. I wrote a letter concerning the longevity of most of these neighbors that are in this territory, or in this neighborhood. All of these people, there's 82 on there that are less than a mile and a quarter from this house. There are another 120 that are another half a mile outreached. I only went a mile and a quarter. That's what that circumference is. Past that, I mean, I went out as far as 3 miles, and there was over 400 people in opposition that we talked to. But I felt, as you said earlier, when it was raised about the people, you know, the younger children here, and do they have a voice? Yes, they have a voice, but you said it doesn't contain as much weight as the people that actually live there and own property that join up to that. And all of those are property owners. Those are not renters. Those are not summer homes. Those are people that live there full time. And my letter indicated that I have been from Sussex County all my life. I'm fourth generation. In that neighborhood, just in that neighborhood, within say 3/4 of a mile, you've got people that are people that have been in that, had that property for 300 years, 200 years. Myself, I'm fourth generation. My grandfather owned the farm, gave it to my father. My father gave it to my brother and I, and we have given it to our children. And that's typical Sussex County farmers. That's what farmers do. They like to see their property passed down through generation after generation. Everybody's proud of their name. I was introduced as Sandy Smith, but I am Sandy Kiefhofer Smith, and I'm proud of that name, Kiefhofer. You know, it goes back. It goes back in the high school, in the church, and I'll touch that subject in a minute, and even though it's not a faith thing. I do want to touch that. For example, the Hastings family, they've been in that area for 300 years. John Hastings, all of you knew John Hastings. He was the local auctioneer. Everybody knew John. His daughter-in-law, Rosalie, is here today. He lived there till he was 90 years old. He was born on that farm. Jack and Rosalie now own that farm, but they just, their daughter just built a farm, built a house. They gave her 5 acres on that property, and she is their only child, so she'll inherit that farm. The McDowell family, whose name that road is named after, McDowell. Helen McDowell lived right across from my grandmother. Their farm was across the street from our farm. And Kenny McDowell's father and mother, Lois McDowell, Lois is still living. She's 81. My mother's still living. She's 83. All four of their children own the farm or live on that farm. So, you know, I don't want to be redundant here. I just want you to know there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 people, 15 people that live within a half a mile there that have been in those generations, second, third, and fourth generation. So, you know, we just didn't move to Sussex County, and we are pure Sussex County. I do want to address something that I'm very offended about from Mr. Rutt, saying that don't the young people have a voice? Yes, they have a voice. And why should we listen to the old people? Well, let me tell you, I'm getting older by the day. And I took offense to that. My mother is 83 years old, and I'm just going to give you a short story here. My mother and father worked at DuPont. My mom had a very prosperous career. She got she conceived with my older brother, who was mentally retarded. My brother, my mother quit DuPont and raised my older brother to the day he died. He died on our farm. So when they say, do young people have a choice? Yes, they do. But let me tell you, old people have stamina. And they should die on their farms. They take pride in that. And I put that in my letter. My mom's not in a nursing home. She's 83 years old. And let me tell you something else. She went back to work at age 78 at the Greenwood Cheer Center. And she was just awarded a year ago for being the oldest Delaware citizen. And Finley's laughing because he knows this is true. He knows my mom has spunk. She has just been struck with Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and has forced to retire just about 7 months ago. But I took offense to that. My mom will not be in a nursing home. My brother's here, and he'll stand here and tell you, we will take care of my mom. She will die on our farm. And we don't plop them. Sussex County people don't plop their parents in nursing homes. And she took care of my brother, who was mentally ill. He wasn't in a facility. And I'm not saying anything about the facility. And to add something else, my mother goes to three different churches every Sunday, and this lady takes her, Miss Jetta Morris. They go to Cannons, Wesley, and Woodland. That is every Sunday. So we are good Christian people, and we are good neighbors. I want to bring that up. Lori Ryder brought the fact up that she's divorced and raised three children. Well, when my youngest son was 16 years old, he was in an accident with his father, and his father got killed. And he saw that, and he had to have counseling. And I raised three children by myself. I know what she's going through there. I work two jobs to pay those bills, to pay those hospital bills. And Dale knows that. Dale's known me. I've worked to the same place 36 years. And he knows that I'm a worker and I'm a good neighbor. And when her husband left her, several good neighbors went to her aid. When she was down and out, neighbors went to her house. They went as far as farming her farm, did not take one penny for it, did not expect one penny for it. They even transported her children to different functions. That's how good neighbors we were to her. I was not personally, but the other neighbors are in this room right now. So we are, you know, all the opposed people here are marked as not good Christians. We are all good Christians. And we are all good neighbors. And we have been good neighbors. I've lived there my whole 56 years. And, you know, I really took offense to that. That's all I got to say.
I didn't know.
Do I have any questions on the...
I didn't know you were that old.
I know it. Isn't it awful? And I'm going to soon retire, Dale. You won't have to look at me any longer. Does anybody have any questions about our neighborhood or... the generations, or, I mean, we've passed those farms down over and over and over through generations, and I'm not trying to discredit any of our neighbors, our new neighbors. Some have been there 30, some have been there 18, some have been there as less as two, because they chose our neighborhood to live in, and they liked our neighborhood. And I guess there is one more thing I'd like to say. Why would you put a facility 7 to 10 miles out of town when you already have troubled children? And I'm going to tell you, it was no easy road for my children. They were, two of them, put me through the ranks. Believe me.
You could have used it.
It's a good thing that they, it's a good thing that they have full set of teeth now, because when they got smart, they got smacked in the mouth. But I would ask her why, with between the ages 13 and 17, you have drugs, alcohol, sex. We've all said that repeatedly. You got the hormones that are going rampant. You can have a excellent child at age 13 and 2 weeks later have the smartest mouth child. You know, you become a stupid parent, believe me, a very stupid parent. And it's amazing how smart you get as they get older, you know. Why would you put children at risk that far out of town? Because if they do not like it there, and we've heard that they're going to be there by choice, they aren't going to be there by choice. Some of the parents are going to make them stay there. Well, when you have drugs, you have hormones running rampant in your body, and there's other addictions there, you're going to seek those out. And maybe they'll be fortunate enough to stop some of them, but maybe they won't. And for those that do walk off and happen to break into somebody's house, you're taking the chance of adding delinquency to those children by placing them that far out of town, because you know kids don't walk anymore. They have cars. They don't walk to town, especially 7 miles from town, you know, so they're going to steal a car. And that makes them a felon, or that adds to their delinquency. This facility, everything that they do is good. It just does not belong out in a rural area. It belongs near infrastructure. Thank you.
Thanks.
Questions?
She's not an attorney, is she?
Yeah, she's not a lawyer either. Eileen Kraft? Ms. Kraft, I'm going to ask you just specific questions. State your name, where you live, please.
Eileen Kraft, 3361 Kraft Road, Bridgeville.
And how long have you lived in that area?
Oh, 20 years.
Not 300 years.
Not 300 years, no.
And what do you do for a living?
I'm in real estate sales.
Do you do residential sales?
Yes, I do.
Do you list the properties and look for buyers in that area?
Yes, we do.
Do you have an opinion as to how such a facility would affect property values in that area?
Yes, I do.
And what is that?
Well, there's right now there's a house that was sold recently in the area. Mm-hmm. It was settled. People have moved in, and the buyer discovered that Shiloh House may be built in that area. And he has now threatened a lawsuit if Shiloh House is built there, because he doesn't want to live in an area or have his family in an area where there's going to be troubled children.
Do, and you, if you have other remarks, now's the time to make them, if you can be succinct.
I had a call today that someone was interested in buying a piece of land for a house. And the one that she called about was 2 acres, and that was too much for her. She said she didn't want to have 2 acres. She wanted a little bit less because it was too much to take care of. So I was telling her about a lot that was on McDowell Road. And she said, oh, no, no, no. She said, I know about that property. She said, there's greenhouses across the road from there. I said, yes. She said, no. She said, there's going to be a house for troubled children. She said, I don't want to live there. And she would not look at the property. Anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kraft.
Ms. Stewart.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. My name is Patricia Stewart. I live at 2934 Kraft Road, approximately 1/2 mile from the Lurie Ryder Farm. I would just like to very briefly touch on the subject of religion and doing good works. I know, even though I really don't believe that is the issue that's in front of this council, that the applicant spent 95% of their time on it. I would like to just touch on it a little bit. I think actually we need to look at the other side of that coin. Let's look at how much damage that they have done. The longstanding community in which this proposed site is located has been totally torn apart. It's now neighbor against neighbor. Friendships have been totally destroyed. It has cost the residents untold man hours of research and a substantial amount of money in researching this. What we are presenting to you are facts. We did not take this opposition lightly, and we have spent much time and effort in getting the facts. The entire community feels as though their world is being threatened, and I, for one, don't feel this is God's work. I really don't think God intended us to help one group of people by totally destroying another group of people. It is true teenagers need to be considered in all this, but so do the longtime residents of this community, but nobody seems to want to do that. They've also talked about doing all their work under a being a charitable, tax-exempt, corporation. I'd just like to make one statement on that, and now I'm quoting the IRS code on requirements of a 501c3, which is what they are. And one of the requirements for staying for the tax exemption status is lessening neighborhood tensions. Well, can anybody really believe that they have done that or are doing that? The second is to combat community deterioration. And with the introduction of the Shiloh House into our community, they are certainly not going to uphold that either. Now, what I would also really like to address that nobody has really spoken too much about is the matter of alternatives. Lurie Ryder and Shiloh House have alternatives. The longtime residents of this community don't. I spoke to Mrs. Ryder, and I asked her why she didn't to sell this land to be used for what it was intended, residential use, and donate the monies to Shiloh House and let them purchase a facility in an appropriate site, a facility with a distance from residential homes, a fast site with the adequate infrastructure that they need for the number of people that they want to accommodate, and near the many local services that they will all require. Her answer to me was she didn't want to. That she'd rather have Shiloh House of Hope in her front yard than to sell to people that she didn't know. I don't think that's an adequate reason to destroy our community. If this petition is denied Shiloh House of Hope, it has the alternative to sell this land that's been donated to them. If this choice is not taken, that's their choice, and it's not the choice of the opposition. If for any reason Shiloh House is not free to sell this land and use the monies as they need, then this isn't really a donation. It's a donation with strings, or more likely, a business venture. If selling some of Lori Ryder's property is not a tenable solution, maybe one of the ministers who got up here and spoke for them would be kind enough to donate some of their church property for this project. I just hope the council keeps in mind, when you're making your decision, the fact that if you deny this petition for Shiloh House of Hope, you're not denying them a facility. You're simply telling them to find an appropriate site. Thank you.
Please, we don't need applause.
Mr. Stork.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
My name is William Stewart. I live at 2934 Craft Road, about a half a mile from Lori Ryder's place. I've lived there 30 years. I'd like to briefly review the highlights of our problem. Lori Ryder's troubled teen plan is strictly a zoning issue. It does not belong in any agricultural residential community, in our opinion. If the council turns down Mrs. Ryder's request, it will not be preventing the Bridgeville House of Hope from establishing a troubled teen residence, but rather redirecting it to an appropriate location where the teens can be protected. Mrs. Ryder has many options available to her other than just forcing it on her neighbors. The issue has nothing to do with religion, charity, or who is pro-Christ or anti-Christ. It has to do with tax benefits, a profitable career move, and marketing unproductive farmland into a lucrative real estate venture, all done under the tax-free environment of a 501c3 not-for-profit corporation, while it destroys the quality of life of a community established hundreds of years ago. If anyone on a council believes this is a religious issue, then its venue is in the wrong place. I think when religious rhetoric enters civil matters, that separation of church and state suffers. Frankly, I was very disappointed when planning and zoning allowed Lori Ryder and her followers to filibuster the merits of Shiloh when it is an irrelevant issue to this matter. No one is questioning the sincerity or the record of accomplishments of Shiloh. I think everybody agrees it's a wonderful situation. To allow the opposition to cloud the issue and unfairly paint those opposed to Lori Ryder's plan as if we were against religion, Christianity, or charity was prejudicial and placed us in an untenable position. That if we disagree with Mrs. Ryder's choice of location for a juvenile containment institution, then we were anti-Christ. In my mind, that's completely unfair. The real question is, will a conditional change of zoning be beneficial to the local agricultural residential community? I feel the answer to that question is a resounding no. Will it help unstable juvenile delinquents and criminals to place them in an area unsupported by the infrastructure and 8 miles from town? I don't think so. Is it fair and reasonable to place a 300-year-old peaceful farming and residential community of young families with children and retired senior citizens in harm's way? I sincerely don't believe that should happen either. There's a valid reason why our area was zoned agricultural residential, and that was to prevent a project exactly like Mrs. Ryder's from impacting us negatively. We rely on our county government to protect us. Anyone who has lived in or moved into this section of Sussex County has done so in order to enjoy a rural and secure way of life. Most of that will be shattered with the introduction of a facility housing a multitude of unstable, unpredictable, awfully criminal adolescents. Changes to existing zoning should involve only minor differences from the original permitted land use. This change is drastic and completely out of the box. No one living within a large area of the proposed project would have opted to move into the area if that facility was present. I think this should be a major consideration in your decision. Those who recently moved here are beginning to feel betrayed. I would think that protecting the zoning for the benefit of the majority would be a major function of the council and the zoning board. The only person to gain from this issue will be Mrs. Ryder. The troubled teens will not benefit, but actually be put more at risk because containment institutions like Shiloh House are much better off in areas that are zoned closer to that type of use. That is why the main office in Orlando, Florida, that provided the model for Mrs. Ryder's project is in the heart of the city next to a women's prison. If the Orlando facility, which boasts a high cure rate, is so successful for them, why would Mrs. Ryder want to go against the model unless she is thinking of herself instead of the troubled teens? I really won't get into maligning Mrs. Ryder. I think her intentions might be good, but at any rate, I thank you for your attention and thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you.
Pretty good job.
Ken McDowell?
You should be a lawyer.
Ken McDowell, I own a farm adjoining my mother's farm, which adjoins this farm, and I feel pretty good for 300 years old.
You're holding up pretty good.
I feel bad, I tell you, after today. You have my sympathies. I'd like to start off by saying that Lori and I go to the same church, Bridgeville United Methodist Church, and certainly I've known her for a long time. She's been a neighbor to her. And but my main reason for being here today is my mother, who is a widow. She lives on the farm adjoining this farm, would be the first in line to be hit with carjacking or whatever else would happen to her. One thing I've learned today and at planning zoning, nobody can guarantee me there won't be an escape or walk-off. All you can guarantee me is there will be one. Well, that's unacceptable. I mean, my mother's lived there all those generations, and she should be able to live her retirement years out in peace and not getting a reverse 911 call, run, hide in the house, somebody just escaped. Isn't that a heck of a way to live? That tells you it's dangerous to start with. You need reverse 911. That's just a terrible thing. I can't even believe we're considering it. Anyway, I own a farm there, In fact, combine sitting in the field right now waiting for us while we're here for dinner. I'd say there's a lot of fear here. 13 single family homes within a half mile of location, raising children. They're afraid for their children. You should be afraid for your children. You should be looking out for the welfare of your children. We all looked out for the welfare of our children. State police, when I came on as election director in 1991, we had 50,000 voters in this county. Today, we have over 115,000. They tell me census is 165,000. The state police do a wonderful job, but we're growing. We've really grown, and we put more on. I've seen the county council. You all need to be complimented for helping aid to get more state police, and I feel good every time you do that, except that we're growing faster than we're getting the state police. You talk about Troop 5. I've towed for Troop 5 for 30 years now. They may be in Delmar, Delaware, at an accident when they get this call. They have so many troopers on. They may be in Laurel. They may be in Lincoln. They may be in Allendale. They're not sitting in that building waiting for this call to run after them for 8 minutes. Yeah, they're going to have to finish up whatever they're doing, whether it's a traffic stop or whatever else they do, as we all are aware of what they do. So don't be thinking that they're sitting there and they're only 8 miles away. If they're in Delmar, it's a good half-hour run if you're done. And if they're finishing up whatever they may be down there for. So the state police really aren't just 8 miles away. Heard a lot of talk about Cedar Academy, and I did some research on them. Went online, did some research, and Cedar Academy costs $5,600 a month to go to, $2,500 for entry fee, and $3,000 for a year for alumni charge. I always wondered how they were going to run this place. I don't know if they're charging this. They said a sliding scale. I guess if you can afford it, you pay it. If it's it certainly amounts to $2.88 million a year, and that's a lot of reasons to want it in your front yard. $2.88 million a year plus.
Lori gets that per year?
Cedar Academy does.
Oh, I thought you said.
And they compared them. And they compared that to Cedar Academy. They made the comparison. I didn't. In all due respect.
No, but I don't. Are you insinuating she's going to make $2.8 million a year?
48 kids times 5,600 comes to $2.88 million.
But she's got expenses out of that.
Well, that's gross. I understand expense. I've been in business all my life. My family's been in for generations.
I just thought that was her profit.
I thoroughly understand business.
All right. I didn't.
Gross.
Okay.
Okay. That's not net.
Okay.
It's got teachers to pay and payroll and board members and vice presidents and what have you. Anyway, it's not a bad deal. Deer hunting, we were talking about deer hunting, but I think Mr. Rupp said don't deer hunt on our land. We don't. We own the adjoining farm and the adjoining farm to that and hunt past that. If the people are escaping, it makes sense to me that the safest person on that road is Loy Rotter. Would you escape from an location and run up to the warden's house? I wouldn't. I'm getting away from there. I'm not escaping to it. So it's no brainstorm for me to figure that one out. So they're leaving there. They're not staying. So we understand. But then they'll be in my woods. Now, we get, because we have so many deer and we have crops out there, from August 15th to April 15th a year, we harvest deer, save our crops. So it's continuously hunted. And certainly if a guy's escaping, he lays down in the bushes, goes to sleep, whatever they're doing, we wouldn't certainly want to shoot through deer and do that. Because of that, we put stands 12 foot up in the air and we shoot toward the ground. But oftentimes, today's ammo shoots through the deer. So with ricochets and things like that, that would be my concern. I don't want anybody's child ever harmed by me or anybody in my family. We're not here to harm anybody's children. But you can't control where they go when they walk off. And I don't think anybody can profess to do that. I was Saturday, I worked Apple Scrapple. I saw two policemen running by, and I stopped with my golf cart and picked them up and took them to Pop Warner Field, at Bridgeville football field, and Woodbridge. And they had a kid there from Seaford House who had started a fight. He was out on a day pass because he'd been so good. He had a 6'2" handler with him, and he got in a fight. And in the progress, the guy breaks it up, so then he starts beating on the 6'2" handler. Well, Delaware State Trooper was coaching one of the football teams. He jumps out. He goes over, handcuffs the kid, gets him off the handler, gets him on the road. When I get there to Bridgeville PD, I use my golf cart for the first time for a paddy wagon to take him back to the Bridgeville Police Department. I say every Apple Scrapple in Bridgeville, something different happens. But my point being, that guy had been judged to have a day pass. He was a good guy, according to where he came from. But I tell you, when he was on the back of my cart, I don't think he was open to the Lord or Bible, because he said some words there that I hadn't heard in a while and said them more times on the way to Bridgeville PD than probably McGinnis World Record. So I took that as a sign myself, because I certainly wrestled with this. And my opinion is it's certainly not in the place that it would belong. With the infrastructure, I would obviously, with all the calls at the Orlando House of Hope, you need two layers of policemen. You need a town police department as well as the Delaware State Troopers. It sounds like to me it would wear one layer of police departments out. Respectfully ask that you let us stay the way we are. BAR1. We understand land preservation. We don't sell it. We keep it. We're not here with our hand out asking you to help us with land preservation. We'd like to stay the way we are. Thank you. Anybody got any questions?
I'm going to have a disgruntled teenager if I don't get to a soccer game.
Disgruntled?
Mr. Cole, I'm sure I have other clients that want to speak, and I can't. No, I said I'm sure I
we're here as long as they want to speak.
No, I understand. And
we're not
the proponents,
cutting them off. They are welcome to come up.
But I have to gauge this as part of my presentation, and you've heard a lot of good points from the individual witnesses, and that's all I have as far as calling witnesses. There may be more people that want to speak in opposition, and then I may have some wrap-up comments. So,
come on, let's go get moving. Don't be shy.
Hello, my name is Jenny Betts. I live at 14493 Adamsville Road, Greenwood, Delaware. I live approximately 8 miles from where this place is supposed to go up. I'd like to read a letter for Reverend James D. Scott, Jr. His address is 16196 Gravel Hill Road, Milton, Delaware, 19968. And it's to honorable members of Sussex County Council. It's dear members of council. I am writing to express my concerns regarding the request to grant conditional use for Shiloh House of Hope to build and operate a residential counseling facility west of Bridgeville. The motives and visions for Shiloh are most noble and should be commended. As a member of the clergy and lifelong resident of Sussex County, I know all too well the need for such a facility to provide an outreach and healing for teenagers on the margins of society. However, the choice to locate the facility at the proposed site is not the best interest of the residents of that area or the clients and staff of Shiloh. Here are a few reasons that lead me to this opinion. Number one, the location of Shiloh in a rural area that is removed from infrastructure and emergency services is neither prudent nor safe. A facility such as the one proposed would be better suited closer to a municipality or located on a major roadway where accessibility is more direct. Any treatment facility, public or private, must have access to services and infrastructure that address all real and potential emergency situations. The proposed location fails to provide this most essential element. Number two, the location of Shiloh is established rural community places an undue burden on area residents. Neighbors must alter their lifestyle significantly to accommodate the new facility and may be open to potential risk. The question of threat assessment at client intake, management during client residential, and the ability of clients to freely remove themselves from the facility without community notice or a valid concern, compounded with less than ideal emergency response times. What assurances are given to neighbors that their persons and their property are safe? While I trust that no problems would ever develop and am confronted that proposed intake guidelines and residency rules are significant to that end, it is a risk potential that needs to be more clearly considered. Number three, the application for this condition use permit has generated strong community opposition. I am aware firsthand of the concerns expressed and find them reasonable. From a practical standpoint, such as opposition is not good for any missionary. In fact, it jeopardizes the entire therapeutic mission, where the community's concern based on prejudice or a not-in-my-backyard mentality, there would be little grounds for objection. In this case, the concerns are successful, substantial, and block the necessary community cooperation, which leads to a successful rehabilitation counseling programs. It is possible that Shiloh could find a community with location more appropriate for community support. To do so would be a win-win for all concerned, rather than fighting an established community from the start. Number four, the granting of this conditional use sets precedent for the future. I am profoundly concerned that this approval will open doors to further approvals involving treatment counseling facilities in areas lacking infrastructure or community involvement. Placements of facilities in areas which cannot support them, services no beneficial interest, and reduces the positive witness and impact such a facility could have in our community. Please take time to weigh these concerns as offered by a neutral party, but one nonetheless concerned for both Shiloh Mission and the community's needs. While the House of Hope model will offer a sound Christian counseling and educational opportunity for at-risk teens in our area, I do not believe that the proposed site for Shiloh is the best location to reach its potential. With prayers for wisdom in your decision-making process, I remain respectfully yours, Reverend James D. Scott, Jr. Now, may I speak for myself?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I used to live right at the corner of Rabbit Run Road. It's maybe a stone's throw from where this is going to be. Okay, there's a lot of us that ride horses there. Like the lady just mentioned, Sandy just mentioned, Idaho is right down the road. That's in Maryland. There's over 25 miles of trail. Among those trails, you come up to Fellowsburg. There's a place called Brooklyn. Brooklyn is crack alley in Maryland. It's a very bad area. For these kids, it may be 2 miles away. I'm nervous. I mean, I've lived here. Albert McDowell, which is Kenny's father, told my husband and I 10 years ago about a little place down the road from where we lived on a poultry farm that was for sale, and we went and we bought it. That's why we're 8 miles from where this place is now. We used to live at the corner. And, I mean, the community is great. The people are great. When the ice storm happened, everybody helped everybody. Bobby, Carrie came and plowed up yards. Everybody knows everybody. I've raised two kids in this area. One's a school teacher. One's a recruiter for the Navy. My kids weren't perfect. I wasn't a perfect parent, but I was always there for them. And I worked. I think this is a good ideal, but I don't think that's a good location. And I really, I mean, for each person that's sitting on this panel today, I'm sure you all have kids. If you don't, you have someone in your family that you care about. Would you think this is proper in your backyard? And if something happens to one of these people, would you feel responsible for it? Thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am.
Next. And anything you can do to make your comments a little briefer, we would love to be able to get out of here by 6 o'clock. By that time, each side would have had 2 hours.
Okay. Hi, my name is Bernice Parsons. I live on Rabbit Run Road in Bridgeville. We've lived there for 21 years. It's originally Keefe Offer land. We have 3 children, 2 grandchildren. And the kids all live around us. Last meeting, I originally addressed the alarm system, at which time they didn't have anything to do about the alarm system. Now they've come up with talking about the reverse 911 system. Exactly. I want to know how many people are they going to let know about this alarm, you know, when they have somebody walk off, which they will. Also, Lori has greenhouses. And I know they have a system for work release. Are they going to have these students working in these greenhouses? If so, is that going to be, are they going to get paid for working in these greenhouses? Or is that going to be like free labor for her? You know?
That's not our concern.
But I mean, you know.
We don't know, ma'am, and we don't.
But that's something that's interesting, you know. All right, and as far as the police calls, you know, the state police do cover a lot of territory. My husband's town police, and I know he has to cover a lot of state police calls when they're busy. So you have to think about that because of the time span and all. Well, last time I mentioned that, the gentleman sitting in front says, well, you ought to feel real safe, you know, because you sleep with them. Well, that was a little inappropriate, I felt. And then they talk about, yeah, you got the age groups. I'd like to know, is it 13 to 18? I've heard 12 to 17, 13 to 17, 13 to 18. I'd like to know, is it 13 to 18 or what?
12 to 18.
Okay. Drug testing. I know they do a drug testing when they get first taken in there. But how often are they going to do a drug testing on these kids? Because anytime you have visitors, drugs can be snuck in. I know that, you know, you don't want to think about that, but they can be snuck in. And the reason why I ask that, my son has a friend that's in Baltimore at Mountain Manor. They have to go through a drug testing every week, regardless of anything. Last time I had asked about that, well, if they go home or anything like that, they have to go through a drug testing. And I heard that they get to go passes and stuff. Well, do they get drug tested or anything like that? Another thing I was a question about, you know, the boys and girls aren't supposed to be together. Well, in my son's friend's case, just last week, they had a boy and a girl that were caught doing the wild thing in one of the offices. Well, how are they going to handle that situation? Because that may happen too to them. Another thing I was concerned about, security cameras. Are they going to have security cameras? And if so, do they have someone that's going to be sitting there viewing them at all times for the outside, the inside, or anything like that?
Not a contract, like
you know, for at nighttime, because, you know, the way the area is, you can have people sneaking into those areas and all. Because going down that ditch bank, because that butts up right to my house and stuff, you can get in there any way you want to. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Next.
Hi, my name's Diane Pestridge, and I live at 2413 McDowell Road, and I'm a newcomer. I've been down here roughly about 2.5 years, bought the property about 10 years ago. I'd like to say on the onset, sir, that ignorance is really bliss, and I don't mean that in a bad way. You know, if you've never been exposed to what children can do, let me tell you something about it. I lived in Violetville, right outside Arbutus in Baltimore, 27 years at that home. Had a lovely home. My family was close. The graveyard where my parents live, I mean, are buried, and my children there that are deceased wasn't far away either. But because of teenagers, these children did everything to us. They stole our property. They put fear in me like I've never known. And now I come down here thinking that I'm going to get away from this. We drove down here for 3 years straight every weekend to try to find a place that we would feel safe and secure. We took our life savings and built this home because on pension, you don't have enough money for mortgages. We took everything we had. And now I'm going to have to face this again. Where to go? I'm afraid. And they can stand up here and tell me this ain't going to happen. That's not going to happen. But things do happen. We're human. And kids are human. And they talk about how hard it is to raise kids now. Well, our parents said the same thing about us. It's hard raising children no matter what age it is and what generation it is. It's just different problems, that's all. And I beg you, please, don't let one person or a group of people take and destroy the rest of our lives. I don't know where to go. And I apologize. Thank you.
Thank you.
You must be worn out jumping up and down.
Gordon Sylvester, I live 2972 McDowell, which puts me the first step across the road when somebody leaves or there's trouble. That's been addressed, and I'm very concerned. My wife is a small lady, but my issue, beyond the safety and all the concerns, is I think the school should be on the dual highway at least. But will they really test water quality, sewer drain off, rain drain off? I know they're saying there's going to be ponds. There's going to be two 2,500-gallon septic system. The guy just go out there and say, yeah, that's a standard system. I think the county really needs to get in because that water's going to drain into my front yard if it overflows, if it does. And my well's in my front yard. And my new neighbors are building a home right now. They're up on a little bit of hill, and they need to consider. They need to do a test. They need to do research. And for them to say that they didn't do a count, they went to the county road or Del Dot, and Del Dot said, we don't need to go out there. It's okay. They have not been out there. The traffic is heavy out there now. We got at least 20 new homes within the two roads. I mean, there is traffic out there now. Only thing, I just think they need to study the ground with the moisture, because we are in a FEMA flood zone, so we must be pretty low. We must be in bad shape to start with. So, yet I've never seen a drop of water anywhere, but that's a side point. But they say it's there, so there must be something under the ground that will not soak this water in and makes it run. And I'd like that checked out. Thank you.
My name is Doug Wilson. I'm speaking for the estate of Frank Wilson, who owns the property to the east and adjacent to the property in question. I'm speaking for the heirs. This is a land use natural resource issue. What the gentleman just said, I had called Maryland Department resources and water flow does not end at state lines. I asked the gentleman over there in Maryland, I know this is a Delaware zoning issue, but they were very concerned with a high-density project like this going in so close to their borders with potential runoff and affecting Maryland. You've got Bright's Branch, which is right across the road from this property, which runs into the Marshy Hope Creek, but the Idlewild Wildlife Management is less than 3 miles from this location, which is and less than 5 miles from the Marshy Hope Creek north of Federalsburg. So it's our concern that this is, because of the density of this residential facility, is not warranted. It's completely out of place in this area and needs to be located someplace where it has facilities to handle sewage and drinking water. Thank you.
Thank you.
Rosalie Hastings. I live at 18875 Atlanta Road. And our daughter and son-in-law have just built a home on the family farm, the Hastings Farm, which is on Hastings Mill Road across from the proposed site. And they're very upset and very afraid. At the beginning of this 2 years ago, I had explained to me, and I'd feel better about it, but something has just driven me to be opposed to this. And especially after learning about the problems at the other sites, we are very, very afraid. My daughter, I don't think there's probably a day she doesn't go by, she doesn't cry about it. And we're friends with Lori and Robin. It's a hard situation. And we have a seed cleaning business on that farm that would be a perfect hiding place in all those outbuildings with very dangerous equipment. We've been told, and I've read it and I've heard it, that we are misinformed, but I don't know what we don't know. And the more we learn, the more afraid we are becoming. One point I've been thinking about is weather conditions. We don't have a lot of big snows, but I've been out there over 38 years and lived in Sussex County all my life. A road like that, like all back roads, they don't get cleared for a long time. And that's one of the iciest roads, the beginning of it, when you turn off Atlanta Road because the sun can't shine. The ice stays there even after the road has been opened. But with a big snow and all those mouths to feed, it would be very hard for supplies to get in. Lastly, if the majority of my neighbors were against something I wanted to pursue, I couldn't go through with it, as I would want to remain a good neighbor to them, as life is too short to be at odds and not be the cause of their decreased property value. Please don't let this happen. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
Oh, one more. Come on down. Oh, two more.
Three more.
Three more.
Four more.
Four more.
Five more.
They got another meeting
here. 6:30.
Another meeting.
I'm not going to be late.
My name is Bill Carey. I live at 4351 Rabbit Run Road, 1 mile from the proposed location. My son is building a house next door to this location. I'm extremely surprised that we're this far in all this, because when Lori first started talking about this, she invited a few select neighbors to her house to give a presentation about this Shiloh House of Hope. And she was very selective and picked ones that she wanted to help support her and convince the rest of the neighborhood. Was we all learned more and got more people involved. Her little meeting turned into a fairly good-sized meeting at her house. And at that time, she was talking about a 120-mile radius. And at that time, they even addressed that it may be Philadelphia, Baltimore, Washington, where these kids are coming from. Since then, they've amended so much of this. It's now just Delmarva, supposedly. The original plan, there was no security. And now, all of a sudden, I guess they feel the need for security. I don't know if it's for people breaking in or people breaking out. But that, and the reverse 911 tells you that there is a concern by her, the House of Hope, and the neighbors that there could be a problem. What if there is a problem? You know, what is the House of Hope going to do for the person that suffers, that if someone should walk away and hurt someone? I'm sorry is going to fix it. You know, that's something that we all need to think about. At the previous meeting, they were talking about didn't know if it was a flood zone. Well, my son has built a house next door. He had to put in a 6-block foundation, plus put special treated lumber just to try to get above the flood zone. Her land, I almost guarantee you, at ground level now, is below that flood zone. I'm going to tell you that I have been on her farm helping my brother who farms it, and have been out there many a day with a shovel out in the fields trying to dig trenches to get the water that lays on her property off and into a ditch. We've put swales out there and everything else to try to get some of this water off. Directly in front of her house is a giant hole that holds water. She actually, you know, and they talked about they didn't know that there's water problems. Well, she actually has, I know for a fact, a sub pump in her basement that runs, you know, shoots water. You know, you'd be up to her house and be nothing to see pumps coming on. Here's water shooting up into the yard where she's pumping her basement in the middle of summer. This year, yeah, I'm sure this year she hasn't had that problem. I don't think anybody's, we'd all would probably love to have a little bit of problem like that right now. They even think about it even more. They actually have talked about they're going to subdivide this property just to try to get systems on it. That already tells you there must be a problem. Why not have it as a one property and have one giant system? Because the ground won't take the water. So they're going to split it and put two systems. You know, we've talked about the hunting, and hunting is not just a sport out there. It is important to our farming friends because of crop damage and all the things goes with that. And no one wants a hunting accident, but they do happen. You know, a lot of people have touched on that, so I'll leave that alone. There's a big concern for all of our elderly residents in the neighborhood that are there by themselves. The farming part of it, there's so much equipment that's out in that area, combines left in the field, trucks. We all know that, you know, as much as you might try, there's some tractors that you can't lock up, and that this would create a big problem for the farmers there because they'd have to worry about that all the time. You know, some of these old farm trucks, back then the doors didn't even have door locks on them. It's nothing to hit, flip a couple buttons and a truck will start on its own or start. Once they get into this conditional use and get going and have beds to fill, the sky's the limit. I mean, you know, now they're saying, well, we're going to do this. But if you've got 6 houses there and 48 beds to fill, as a business person or anybody, you're going to do whatever it takes to fill those beds. If it means taking someone with a little shadier past than the previous ones, then that's what you're going to do. The other point I want to make is that the point was made that DelDOT felt no need to do a traffic study. Well, I've kind of just, in my mind, did my own little traffic study. They're talking about they're going to have 6 buildings with at least one person there 24 hours a day to watch each building. So that's 6 people, 3 shifts, 7 days a week. That equals out to about 126 people that have to get in and out of there in a week. That's approximately 6,552 cars in a year. The security person that they're talking about is there. If they have a security person who wanders around, I'm not sure. I heard 24 hours. I've heard just at nights. But even that is, 3 people, 3 shifts a day, comes out to a number of cars. Then there's the staff members. I'm assuming just small numbers of 5 staff members times 7 days a week times 35 cars. You know, that's 35 cars. There's also the parents that must be there. What they showed the Tuesday meeting, 48 kids. Every Tuesday they have a meeting, church services. I didn't even figure in the church services. And then there, on top of that, there are the support staff, you know, groundskeepers, maintenance for equipment, their trip outs that they're talking about, odd trips, you know, you need to run, go get something, health issue, people coming in for health and all that, vendors. Roughly, I figured out that in a year's time, we're talking about, if you did all the math on all that, probably close to 25,000 cars up and down this McDowell Road in a year. And tell me that's not going to affect the farming operations when you've got this kind of traffic, the people that are living there, everything. That's a mess of cars to have out in the country on a tar and chip road back and forth in a year's time. I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Somebody else?
I'm going to make it short, sweet. Please vote down the House of Hope. I am a contractor and have drove school buses for the last 30 years. I do approximately 2,000 kids a day. I've had the opportunity to transport troubled children. It started off as Broad Creek at Sussex Tech. From there, it moved to Seaford as West Seaford Academy. Presently, there is the same school, and it is located in Laurel, and it goes under, I think, Laurel Academy. In that time, I was the only one that transported it. There wasn't that many children. I rode from Lewis, Delmore, Laurel. In each of these places, didn't have over two children that were the troubled children. And to be that troubled child, you were taken out of high school or whatever school you were in because you wouldn't do what you were supposed to do, so you were sent to Scope. When you didn't get, that's an alternative school. When you didn't make out in an alternative school, you were sent on to these academies. These children, like I said, I had one in Lewis, I had one in Delmar, two in Seaford, two in Bridgeville, Greenwood. I approximately hauled anywhere between 14, 15 children. My first day on the bus was, hey, B, who the F are you? I was treated like that, talked to like that for 2 years. I couldn't keep anyone on the bus. They jumped out the back door. They laid down in front of the bus. They stabbed each other on the bus. I went to the police station constantly. From there, I ended up, I had to go to court constantly. The reason I'm telling you this, and my concerns are so great for Lori and her, these young girls, what they're trying to do, I felt like I could make a difference and I could really do something. But the day they brought the gun on my bus and shot up in Seaford Academy was the day I cut my losses, sold the bus, got out of it. And the man that's got it asked me every day if I'll take it back. No way. I think earlier, probably last year when I was talking to Lori, she could have rode on that bus and actually seen what some of these children were like. That's all I wanted to say. Please vote against this.
Could you put your name on the record, Ms. McDowell? Okay. Could you put your name on the record?
Sharon McDowell.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bridgeville.
Anyone else?
Yes, sir. Come on.
My name is Chuck Pestridge. I'm from Baltimore, and my wife just spoke a little while ago. And the reason we had to get out of there on kind of the teenagers, we had a facility not some similar to what she's going to put up the road there across the street from us. It got so bad that I had to walk my dog with a piece of pipe because these teenagers said that they were going to beat me up. And the opposition was saying, who's scared of a 13-year-old teenager? Well, let him go with me 1 week up into Baltimore, and I'll show him who's scared of a teenager. You get four or five teenagers, 13, 17 years old, and they're bigger than most of you guys up there. And I'll tell you what, they can hurt you.
Stand up.
And man, people don't realize the situation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
One more. Quick.
Sit down, Mr. Willard. You're not done yet.
Chop, chop.
Gonna be last man standing here.
She had Penn with you on the bus.
Yes, I'm William James Driscoll. I live at 20501 West of Church Road. Me and my wife has the property, joins up to Miss Ryder. Then I love to hunt and everything myself. And before all this got started, Lori stopped up one day. And she said, I don't know if you knew all that was going on, but I'm going to tell you. She said, I'm going to start one house with 12 children. That's going to be the total. And I told her right there, I said she was making a mistake. And later on, she had a meeting at her house. and everybody went to it. And she said it was any of the neighbors was against it, she'd drop it. I don't think it's been dropped. I thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Quick.
I got one. No, let him talk. I don't have to work till 7 o'clock.
That's right.
Tomorrow morning.
I got another meeting here at 6:30, so I'm okay.
Hi, my name is Angela Patterson, and I'm currently building a house with my boyfriend on 2987 McDowell Road, which is right next door. I also go to church with Lori Ryder myself. Just started going there a couple months ago. My boyfriend Bobby couldn't be here because he had to go back to work today. But at the last meeting, he made a point that he is also a police officer for the town of Bridgeville. He made a point that during his traffic stop one time, he had to call backup at Troop 5, and it took 45 minutes for him to get backup. Another point that I heard earlier today that made me very angry and him as well was the comment that was made about the accident that happened during the hunting season. That is his father, and we're very angry about what was said. The point was that accidents do happen. It just made me really angry that that was said. It didn't need to be said. I just would really like this to get voted against. We are building a house right next door. We do plan on having children one day. We don't want 48 strange teenagers playing in our backyard. I'm very against it, and I hope it gets voted against. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
My name is Joyce Lehman. I live at 19315 Handy Road. I'm not saying this is a bad thing. I'm a firm believer that everybody needs a home, but everybody feels safe in a home. At any given day or night, my husband leaves between 12 and 3 in the morning. Now, I have two dogs. They're ankle biters, and one good swift kick will kill them. Now, between 12 and 3, I'm okay. But after 3 o'clock, my husband's not home, and I'm by myself. Now, we've lived here for 2.5 years. We love the place. We've had a summer home near Rehoboth for quite a few years. When I retired, we came down here. I called Delaware my home, but I want to feel safe, and I don't know how much safe I will feel. Now, I know Lori. We go to the same church. She's a nice person, but there's issues, like I will not feel safe if I know that that is so close to my home. And I only live like 10 blocks from the Maryland border. And I can see these kids coming down my house now. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Sorry. My name is Cindy McDowell. I live at 3169 McDowell Road. My daughter and her husband and two children, 3 months and or 4 months and 3 years old, live next door. I work full-time as a nurse. I also work full-time babysitting my two grandchildren. Please consider my grandchildren playing in their yard with this in their backyard. My concern is, too, they're going to have a guard. It's not mandatory at nighttime. The person who will be staying in the cottage will be sleeping, and this guard is going to be watching 48 teenagers with hormones racing. My also concern is, you know, they're asking us to give to our community. Most of those people in that green volunteer in their community. We work one and two jobs, and we all volunteer, not all of us, most of us volunteer in our community to make it better and to make it safer.
Thank you.
Can you imagine how long we would have gone if I hadn't reined them in a little bit?
Yeah.
I have.
It's hard to tell.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. That's right. Not all these people that spoke were clients, but I have a graph that actually Mrs. Stewart prepared reference. You have a lot of opposition. She did an interesting graph about how local the opposition is, excluding people out 15 miles outside. This is very local opposition. Petitions that were just handed to me today as I walk in here, about 150, and about 450 names. I just roughly counted them, and some letters. You know, one or two of those might be redundant, but I want to make sure they're in. You know, the lady in black's husband, Mr. Hastings, spoke, I think, at the very end of planning and zoning at that hearing. And he's either a manager or works full time at the seed cleaning plant, which is, I think it's right here, right next to it. And after he had heard everything about, you know, their good intentions about helping teens and the program, the location, he just stood up here and said, I work in the seed plant. I walk up the stairs every day. I look at that property, and this shouldn't go there. And he sat down. And he didn't know about the comp plan. He didn't know about all the places that the conditional use is allowed in your various districts. He didn't know about the strategies thing. But he was right. The law is pretty simple. This will not conflict with the character of the zone. It will. That's what Steen and Gibson says. And this will not pose a risk to the public. It will, whether it's real or perceived. We know now that their model in 7 years had 331 police responses, individual police responses. It's good program, but it's at-risk children that comes with these risks, and it doesn't belong in this neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you. Make a motion, we adjourn.
Hey, ask for anybody else?
Is there anybody else before we close the hearing?
Is Mr. Bono?
Hey, we're going to close the... Right. Well, one more person.
Come on down.
Oops.
Actually, there's another meeting starting in here in about 10 minutes, so we appreciate
wait. Quick.
My name is Bonnie Carey, and I live on 3114 McDowell Road. And I just wanted to say that the kids that were here today, with the parents that spoke, they are not the kind of kids that I feel that we're going to get in the end. I think we're going to get a lot of bad children with a lot of bad things that they have done. A day program like they've been into is fine. But when it comes to where they have to stay for all the months, I just think that we're going to get a whole bunch of a whole different group of kids. Thank you.
Thank you.
We will close the public hearing and
make a motion we defer on that, whatever the number is.
1702.
1702. See you 1702.
And we're closing the public hearing?
Yes, we did.
That'd be fine. I think we've heard every angle.
Okay, I have a motion by Mr. Cole, seconded by Mr. Rogers, to defer on CU 1702. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Yes, motion's carried.
Thank you for your attendance.
Let me explain. This will be put back on the agenda after planning and zoning makes a recommendation.
They meet tomorrow.
Sometime in the future. There will be no more information that we will take, no more public hearing on it. The public hearing is closed. It would just be put on the agenda for old business. So you do not have to be here, but you're welcome to come if you want to when we vote on it, but we will not take any more input. We're done. There's an agenda published in the newspaper every week, or there's a number you can call and get it off the agenda.
I need a motion to adjourn.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.